Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Nick Hoffman, your host of My Independent Childhood. We're rounding out our Harrison Ford month, and thanks to some loyal voters online, we have chosen our holiday theme for next month, which is traumatic animated Disney movie. We even have a Christmas gift coming for you, so awesome. Next, and possibly even more important, the Patreon is up under Here Be Tigers. We are attempting to do a group Patreon with the Geekly Oddcast and Otter Worlds, and the development of Here Be Tigers. There's some content online. We will release our episodes early there, but what we're starting for next year is another series. Our spinoff, Mission Briefing, was one of the most popular things we did, so we thought that would be a good thing to do again. We're going to start with the Aliens movies, so, you know, come enjoy that. It'll be great. But other than that, you'll notice that we are growing, we're expanding, we're trying to make this myopia thing work. So anything you can do to encourage us, engage us, would be great. Links to the Here Be Tigers Patreon will be everywhere before you know it. And your support really does mean a lot to us. So thanks. Also, if you're not doing so already, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Letterboxd. Everywhere you can find us, we're there. So enjoy Patriot Games, and we'll see you in December for, you know, traumatic Disney movie. Thanks, guys.
Harrison Ford, lick the Blarney Stone. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of My Epic Adventure Childhood, and all we've got
Matthew W. Quinn, who has a new book out, Little People, Big Guns.
Hello, this is Daniel, and watch out, Jack Ryan, he's Irish.
Yeah. So this week, following our, I think, pretty good episode on The Fugitive.
Yeah, that was pretty good. This is such a dad movie. This is like the biggest dad movie that ever dadded.
Yeah, this is a dad movie where, like, the kid is dozing off and he punches him and says, "This is why a good man needs a gun. This is why I have a bunch of... This is why dad has a closet you can't go in." Is this the origin of, I need my family back? Because this is 92.
I don't know, man. Maybe? Full disclosure, I know nothing about Tom Clancy or his video game. Well, I know his video game universe, I guess, but I know nothing about his books. I know nothing really about the movies. I'm coming in blind here. Is this par for course with what he'd usually do?
Yeah, or, I mean, I, and frankly, this is a solid thriller. We gabbed about during it, but this is kind
of
what
he said what movie we're actually doing yet?
Picture Games.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think so.
Well, but here's the thing. This isn't a radio show. People see it in the name of the feed. Like, Patriot Game. I mean, now to be fair, the people who subscribe to this podcast, you know, the thousands of you out there in TV land, you listen to whatever we do, so thank you. That makes you better than, you know, my family. But for the rest of you, yes, this is Patriot Games, which I guess Dinesh D'Souza didn't claim in time.
I guess not.
It's not.
Dinesh D'Souza's Patriot Games, what would that look like?
It'd be like chess, but Trump is the king. Oh, the Black King would be Obama, and he'd always lose.
I was thinking going to prison for campaign finance violations and saying it was your duty to do so.
Well, don't worry, he was pardoned.
Oh, boy.
It could be Roger Stone's Patriot Games,
That's a real pretty Nixon tattoo you got.
Or for our fans up in Boston, it could just be Tom Brady's movie, which also would involve probably Roger Stone.
And Dinesh D'Souza.
Dinesh D'Souza. Not too many people appear with MAGA hats on TV.
Oh, Tom Clancy totally would be if he was still around, don't you think?
He's alive.
No, Tom Clancy died a couple of years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Then he's been accepting all of my love letters.
Jack Ryan, it turns out, is actually real.
That's funny.
Just for the record, he died in 2013.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's a shame. And here's the thing. I do actually enjoy some of these books. It may have taken me 16 months, but I read I read Hunt for Red October, which I thought had already been an episode, but apparently it hasn't.
I only read the first chapter of Hunt for Red October, and the only thing I remember is how the Soviet captain of the submarine was all pissed off because the Soviet Union banned religion, so he couldn't properly grieve for his wife.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think also his wife died during surgery because the doctor was incompetent, but was a party member.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Did you read that one?
At least part of it. Because remember the line, the state had to pay.
I mean, it's a good line. I feel the same way whenever I drive through Tennessee, that the state should pay. That's a joke em up. I think
it was Florida that had all the toll roads.
I'm paid to do comedy. Sometimes.
Wait, you're getting paid? No, I'm kidding.
Not this.
There's not some secret money line that we're not aware of.
No, it's called Cineprov, but I think only Larry gets the money. Mm. He runs around naked or pays his wife to. I don't know how that works. Listen to this. So, Sudsy, can you give me a synopsis of Patriot Games?
I can try. Okay, so Jack Ryan was a former CIA analyst who's now a history or military strategy professor at, Naval Academy in Annapolis, right?
Oh, thank you. Excuse me.
And he's visiting the British Navy class in London, and while there's an IRA attack that's trying to kill a member of the royal family. Jack Ryan gets involved. He kills one of the IRA members' younger brother. So that guy swears revenge, and away we go.
That guy being Sean Bean.
Yes, yes. Well, only through
the whole movie,
up until the tail end. Yes.
So did Trevelyan. So I mean,
yeah, he is the villain. So this doesn't really count as a Sean Bean always dies sort of thing.
Except that it does, because brace yourself, Sean Bean also continues to always die.
I think that dude from Highlander. You have to sever his head.
You mean the
Christopher Lambert?
Good lord.
The thing about Patriot Games is that, you know, once you get into Patriot Games, you cannot survive Patriot Games.
Now, are you Christopher Lambert or Peter Lorre?
Is there a difference?
The non-union Mexican equivalent.
Yeah. That one.
Major Tory. Just call me T. So regardless, we end up cold open, London. British people, T. And then, you know, Harrison Ford knocks out an Irishman, takes his gun, shoots said Irishman, then shoots other said Irishman. Sean Bean unfortunately survives.
And Jack Ryan gets shot in the shoulder.
Yeah, and becomes a war hero. And then they just keep showing pictures of him. I guess he was a Marine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we keep flashing back to a few good men.
I would have seen...
We can handle this movie.
I would have pictured him more as the Jack Nicholson character than the Tom Cruise character.
Oh, 100% every day of the week. You film it now, you don't get any of that Jack Nicholson intensity, like yelling. You just get that long look. You're just like, you gotta fuck with me, kid.
Yep.
I know.
Well, here's the thing about Tom Clancy that always sort of got me. The dude knew everything there was to know about military hardware and military strategy. You could tell that he'd done his research, but he just could not write characters that well.
I mean, if a leprechaun shot out of this movie at one point, I'd be like, ah, yes, the villain. Yeah. You never get to hold with me, Lucky Charms.
I compare him, though, to people like John Le Carre. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah.
Le Carre? All right. And he actually was trying to get into his characters' minds when he was writing. And Tom Clancy never tries.
Here's the problem. Honestly, 100%. There's two people. James Bond and Sherlock Holmes. Mm-hmm. I love both of them. I love the books. I've read the books. I've seen all the movies. They are the stars of the show. Everyone else is a cartoon character, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Watson's fine. But otherwise, you're just like, my husband died. I was the greatest person I ever loved. Here are these cufflinks of his that I wear that have blood on them for no reason. Man, I think you might have killed your husband. No! I mean, but like that's how the game they always are, because these man types wrote ideal man characters, and so no one else matters except for the men. I mean, the daughter's adorable, the wife is attractive, but all she does is show how awesome Jack Ryan is as a husband. She wears lingerie at one point, mm-hmm. and then she's a mother the entire rest of the time.
She does operate on somebody's eyeball for a bit.
Kinda. But it matters to nothing. She's competent. That's it. She doesn't help him solve the crime in any way.
Yeah, that's... And then even going further, Sean Bean isn't really a good villain. I mean, his motivations... He's got one motivation, which is avenging his brother's death, but we never really learn, like, why he joined the IRA in the first place.
There's a reference to his dad being killed by the Ulster cops, the Royal Ulster Constabulary.
You're right. Why does that matter to killing Jack Ryan?
Because he asked why he joined IRA, so it could be revenge for his dad who got killed by taking revenge for someone else, and around and around it goes.
Well, I mean, okay, that's fair. Why? But that then breaks his character, doesn't it?
No.
I think...
No. So, Matt, then why give up his love for the IRA just to kill Jack Ryan? Because that's the entire third act.
Well, because they're not in conflict until the very end when he shoots the other two to chase after Jack Ryan.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. That's the third act. So why ruin the entire mission to just go after Jack Ryan if the reason you joined the IRA is to avenge your family?
I really don't see the contradiction here, especially since he's been getting crazier and crazier before that, like shooting the book dealer. So at that point, he was going off script already. This just culminates in it.
Then that's the argument. Like, I think the movie needs to lean into that.
Right.
Because I don't disagree with what you're saying. I just don't think the movie makes the argument fully, because they still follow him. Like, I wish there was more of a tension. Like, maybe you shouldn't be on this mission. I keep wanting to call him Jim Bean. What's the character's actual name? Does anyone catch it?
Sean Miller.
So it's Sean Bean and Sean Miller?
Yes.
Okay. So Sean. Why don't you help us on this mission? I know you're crazy about this Jack guy, but you know, you should help us. Good old Jim. You know, you should let Jimmy die. But I get it. Why don't you shoot his daughter in the liver? Oh, you hit the spleen.
Wondering what point they're going to shoot him for being a liability.
Why not?
Well, they kept talking earlier about how he would never, ever, ever talk, so he was probably going to be able to get away with causing drama for so long because it was just that valuable to them.
I mean, I will say the problem with this is the same with a lot of these guys. I love Robert Ludlum. A lot of Robert Ludlum, but the same thing with Jason Bourne. Like, these men are magical. They're superheroes, and they're all just white dudes that have powers. Like, I mean, I'm gonna get hate because people are assholes, but like, they're like, the woman was the bad guy that they were tracking down. Kinda. She has like six lives.
Okay, what about that scene that's like halfway through the film when they're looking at that satellite image of the training camp? Yes, the training camp, and then they zoom in on the woman, and Harrison Ford just gets all excited and says, tits.
Apparently, she's actually English, not Irish. So that could be an interesting backstory.
That could be an interesting backstory, but that was just such a weird scene for a Jason Bourne sort of character.
Well, I mean, fine, I'll give her credit. C, it's a boob joke. There should be something here about her characteristics at all. If she is English, why did it matter that she joined up with the IRA? We don't get any of that.
Nope.
Now, the problem is, at this point, we have Harrison Ford in a lot of shit where they just let him drive the car. And he deserves to drive the car. He's great. But they keep cutting away shit that doesn't really matter. That they don't bother to explain.
We tried to talk about that scene when he's back in the CIA because James Earl Jones ropes him back in. Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. Different movie, sorry. Anyway.
No.
Is it? Well, yeah, okay, yeah, it is.
I don't even know what you're alluding to, but yeah.
Godfather 3. Okay. That scene when he's back at the CIA and there's like all those quick flashes between the accident and seeing that red hair woman. Yeah, basically. I'd forgotten what you called it, but yeah.
Guys, shows it! Okay, so to explain the scene, Jack Ryan is in some CIA blank room. It's not Langley. It's like their annex. It's like when a school overflows and they have a modular unit outside. But he's on the cusp of something he doesn't know, and then he goes, I have to take a shit to the people he's talking to or whatever. Then he goes into the bathroom and a woman comes out of the stall and she goes, I guess one of us is in the wrong bathroom. Which is a really weird line, because if you come out of the bathroom and a woman is checking herself out in the mirror, your first line is, one of us is in the wrong bathroom. It's like, and then you just walk away. You ignore the man who's having a PTSD attack in the window. I'm sorry you do. But, and then there's a 35 second to minute long montage of him just realizing, long hair. I mean, it's practically a scene out of like a public broadcasting kid show where you're just like, triangles, there's another triangle. And then he's just
is
like,
is it just a bill sitting up there on Capitol Hill while we're at it?
If only.
At least that I can understand for the thing.
Well, here's the other thing about this movie compared to The Fugitive. The stakes, to me, never really felt that high.
Well, and also, Sean B. needs more to do.
Yeah.
Like, because Tommy Lee Jones is right on the cusp of the Academy Award. In this movie, Sean Bean is just like, I'm in a prison cell. I'm going to kill you.
I hope you're bloody proud of yourself.
I mean, now, he deserves, like, an award for something, because he's just, it's all expressions, though. He doesn't get that many lines in this movie. I mean, honestly, right?
Yeah, not really. We just don't find out a whole lot about him.
I will also say this movie is kind of misdirected in that we don't know who's telling the story most of the time. It seems like there's goings on, but there's not a narrative. Like, I wish there was more panic from Harrison Ford trying to figure things out, or if it was occasionally cut to Samuel L. Jackson trying to figure... The other thing we haven't really gotten to is how incredible this cast is.
Yeah.
His wife is Ann Archer. Samuel L. Jackson, Richard Harris is in this as the head of the IRA. Sean Bean is in this. Thor Jones.
Thor Birch is in it when she was still a child actress.
This movie is incredibly well acted, and I have no complaints on the actors. Even the, like, no one who plays the English Lord. What's his name?
Holmes?
Is the actor anyone?
Let me take a look. James Fox is his name, and,
No.
No.
I mean, even he does his druthers, right? Everyone is good in this. Even the director is fine. It's just that the script has nothing to say about any of these people.
When I was talking also about higher stakes, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, because I know you're more familiar with this than me, but like Hunt for Red October is about a nuclear sub going rogue, right? So potentially a war could start. The Sum of All Fears, a nuke's gone missing and ends up destroying Baltimore. Those are stakes that shows the impact that Jack Ryan's work and the people that he's around have on the world. So that's important. In this one, I mean, protecting a member of the royal family, who cares?
Well, I think in the book it was Prince Charles and Lady Diana, but I mean, if you like Sean, if you like Jack Ryan, the character, he's got a bunch of IRA guys who are going to murder him. So that's, if you're into the character story, this, if you like the character, then that's just high stakes, even when one guy's going
to
die.
This allows us to play a game we haven't been able to play before. And Sudsy, I know what you're going to look up. When did she die?
Who, Diana? 97?
Oh, then this should definitely have been about them.
Yeah.
But...
Although, were they divorced at this point?
I don't think so.
Mm. It was soon, though. They were divorced for a few years before she died. But I was going to say, Matt, this gets to play a game that you usually play on the post after this. And if you're not subscribed, according to Quinn, look it up. It's actually a really good blog that doesn't link to us on the episode every time, but usually does. So you should look it up. And if you're not on it, it's great. Matt knows that we check it constantly.
Thank you.
But I was going to say, this allows us a rare opportunity to play the game, how to fix this move.
See much of a problem with it.
No, I'm not saying it's bad, but I think you know what would have been better, at least in my mind, is that if this third act turned into the Purge, the first Purge movie, which is that the whole thing, or the end of Skyfall, which is that the first act and a half is the fact that, you know, Sean Bean isn't dead, or Sean Miller isn't dead, or, you know, a guy named Sean is out to kill his family, and he's preparing for an attack on his house, right? Because effectively the movie is halfway between Scream and Skyfall, where they're surrounded by guards, and the guards keep dying. Like, it is a horror movie.
I know I referred to that whole house invasion bit as Tom Clancy's Straw Dogs. Yeah. I felt proud of myself.
Straw Dogs 6. but I mean, but that's, I think that would have made it a better movie, because, like, the first act is an action movie. The second act is, like, a psychological thriller.
I think all of them thought, except for Jack Ryan, that Sean was dead. Like, they see, he's staring at the screen, sees someone marked living on the map, and then the satellite goes out of range.
Yeah, but that should be the middle or to the end of the second act, so that the whole thing is who's going to show up. Is he going to show up, right? Like, the family's trying to play for normality, and then Jack is kind of itchy that someone's going to show up and try to attack the family, and they think he's going nuts. I think that's a better third act, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that people, like, at least in my head, that he's like, I can't do a Harrison Ford. Can you do a Harrison Ford?
No, no. There is, only Harrison Ford can properly do a Harrison Ford.
The thing is, I don't think anyone would ever doubt Jack Ryan if he's convinced that someone's going to invade the house and turn into a bunker.
But they do! Don't they? Because the wife says, oh, he's dead, stop watching the TV.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, there's a scene where, and this is not to argue with you, this is a scene, you look rough like I'm fighting, but there's a scene where they're having breakfast, and he's talking to his daughter, and she's like, do you want toast or toast? They're like, I want pancakes. Like, there's not time for pancakes, do you want toast or toast? And the head of the IRA is on the screen. Right? She's like, and he goes, I don't know if Sean is dead or not, but this wasn't an attack by an IRA. And then he just stares at the TV.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's what it exactly is supposed to be. He's supposed to realize that his family's in danger and no one else realizes they're in danger, and he doesn't want to tell them that they're in danger.
I thought you were going for is that everyone thinks he's insane and turns out he's right, but no one would ever think Jack Ryan is wrong.
No, I think that they should take it further. I think the guy with the goatee should challenge his sanity.
He does challenge Jack Ryan that one scene after the flashbacks.
That's the one time.
Yeah.
I think that should be the theme, because they challenge it at the very beginning. She goes, Jack, I think you need to be, and when he offers to be on the case, mm-hmm. He goes, you shouldn't be on this, it's too close to you. And then he just turns out to be an ally, and the guys will contend, I thought he was the inside man instead of the bodyguard, because that would have been a better movie.
Yeah, I still don't. Did we ever figure out who the inside man was?
The one who they were kneecapping in the basement. I'm
right. He was a bodyguard from the Lord. The one who said Jack Ryan invited you to his house.
Oh, right, that guy.
Remember that scene? Yeah.
And we don't even remember. I don't even remember his name.
He's not established.
Okay.
He shows up in every scene that the Lord is in, but he doesn't have enough to do. That's why I wanted it to be Goatee Man. Because at least he talked to.
It'd be easier for the IRA to turn someone in the British government than in the American.
We're not talking about a logical thing. We're talking about a movie. I agree with you, Matt. I'm just saying, like, I mean, you're looking English right now. You're wearing a raincoat. We're talking about a movie, and in that case, we need someone who looks like they could be. Like, someone who's arguing with Jack Ryan. The problem is everyone who argues with Jack Ryan, the next scene, they're like, Jack, you're right. That doesn't make a great film.
Yeah.
I'll argue this is still a pretty good movie. We'll get to the end, but...
Do you know what the best Jack Ryan movie's ever been?
I know what you're going to say, but I'll let you say it.
Okay, thank you. Air Force One.
Yeah.
Air Force One is the best Harrison Ford Jack Ryan movie that there's ever been.
Well, that's probably a little more plausible than some of the later events in the Jack Ryan books, like the war with Japan.
Well, I mean, even not reading the books. Jack Ryan is two things. He's A, Harrison Ford. He always will be. He always should be. But B, it's a grounded character. He's a dude. He'll take a punch, but it's not going to leave him unscarred.
Plus, there's stakes in that movie. I know a big part of the conflict here was that his family's in danger, but that's the exact same conflict in Air Force One. But it matters more because he's in a much more important position where if he screws up, then people are going to get hurt.
And I mean, the thing about Air Force One, which is an episode 150 episodes ago.
I still like that movie. I love that movie more than I should.
The point of the podcast is to, it's self-effacing, it's rending your garments, it's, you know, self-flagellating.
But then at that, we watch Spawn again.
No. But that's the thing. I rend my garments and say, I liked The Fugitive. It's a flawed movie. And Harrison Ford would rot in prison for all eternity for stealing an ambulance from the hospital that had one ambulance when people are dying. And being like, I have to save my family. It doesn't matter that you save your family. People died because you stole a fucking ambulance. And yet, it's a great film that I will watch again probably 15 times before I die, which could be at any moment. But here's the thing. If we're talking about the IRA, why is there no talk of the metric system? Catholicism?
I do have one IRA guy is talking crap about the Catholic Church and birth control.
He does. What you mean right before the guy shot, he's like, I'm not going to put on the condom because Jesus said if I wrapped it up, I'll burn in hell.
Yep.
And then he got shot in the face. So he's probably burning in hell. Because if we've learned one thing from Jason Voorhees, if you're killed by a serial killer for venial things like a Hummer, you're going to go to hell anyway. Mm-hmm. I like the idea that he said he'd go to hell for wearing a condom when he hired a prostitute. The man knows his Catholicism. Vatican II in his business.
You're not wrong.
I'm a Catholic. I get it. I have my bobblehead JP2. We're good.
Is that why you keep that life-size Buddy Christ upstairs?
Our Savior, so maudlin up on the cross.
He came here to give us the willies.
That's due for a rewatch.
Yeah.
Not an episode. I don't think Dogma's an episode.
We could talk about that later.
Fucking Christ. I will say, though, I will rewatch it with you any day of the week.
All right, man.
All right, so let's get to the end of this Patriot Games.
Sean Bean escapes from prison in Britain, comes to America, tries to kill Dr. Ryan Jack's wife and his daughter, fails, flees to Libya, apparently escapes a raid by the British, and comes back to America. How, it's not entirely clear.
I have a very specific set of skills for him.
Well, we're also...
Teleportation.
You know, that was another thing that I didn't quite get. That is a necessary skill.
Using the power of whiskey and Bolshevism.
Have you heard of the metric system, Boyle?
I just...
3,000 miles. It's only 2,000 kilometers.
I could walk 5,000 miles, and I could walk 5,000 miles.
Well, another big thing about that is... Another big thing... That was a Scottish song anyway. You know that, right?
Yeah, but my accent torqued.
Okay. 'Tis a fine song, but 'tis not an Irish ballad, English.
It might be Sassenach.
Yeah, well, that's another thing, though, about that, is part of the drama is supposed to be that his family was targeted and his daughter lost a spleen. And
then Miller then has the just utter nastiness to call him.
Yeah, and say, having going to have trouble fighting infection, is she, or whatever the line was there. But that should be the big emotional heart. But the wife gets over it like that, and then the daughter... it's kind of just forgotten about.
Well, and the problem is, if this was a, correct me right now, Carpenter movie, that's the Drew Barrymore scene at the beginning of Scream.
Oh, Wes Craven, you mean?
Craven, excuse me.
What's your favorite organ removal?
Well, but that's the thing, right? Like, so Aaron, your daughter lost a spleen. Like, that's a really unsettling thing, because the scene is essentially Jack Ryan drinking a whiskey at the end of the long day, because, right, he has the... like he's piling through research, he's trying to track these people down, he has a drink, and the drink is mostly empty, which is film shorthand for the fact that he's been up all night and he's paranoid.
Yeah.
Right? He's at the end of his rope, and then the fucker calls him. This is a scene out of Silence of the Lambs, right? He's at the end of his rope, and he's like, oh, you want to get to be back in charge? Like, it's just such a weird card.
Because
like,
using up all of the IRA's money on long distance calls just to troll you.
Yeah, I got a blue box from Captain Crunch. If I blow my shillelagh right into the bone, I get free.
Wait. So are we suggesting that Sean Miller had a warp whistle and that's how he got across the Atlantic Ocean?
So I'm gonna put you in your place right now. A colleague of mine at the school I teach at, I'm not gonna mention names, was showing the Pirates of Silicon Valley, which we reviewed on this show, and you were on the episode.
I don't believe I was on that one.
Well, fuck you. You were on the episode.
Yeah, because I remember Steve Jobs is an asshole.
And you got out of a Captain Crunch box, there was a weenie whistle you could do and blow into the phone at the right frequency.
Right.
And get free long distance. That was my illusion. Previous episode, Patreon feed. Hear me, Tiger.
We used the weenie whistle from the Captain Crunch box to mess with the evil American imperialists. Yeah. I think I lost the Irish there for a second.
It was good.
Until you said American imperialists, I don't think the RRA was really focused on that too much.
He's all about the fucking crown, you mugger.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but we've got to say something that the Soviets would like to get the missiles, you know?
Again, that wasn't the provisional IRA, which is the one that was going out committing the terrorist attacks.
This takes place before the Good Friday. Of course, they're all doing terrorist attacks.
We're going to get into this now, Matt.
As our host fixes himself another whiskey, there were a whole bunch of different groups in the same way that there are with other terrorist organizations around the world. And
it seems almost like they're doing some kind of power play within the IRA, that they're hiding in Libya while the British purged all the others.
That's probably what was going on. And like Richard Harris, the whole reason he could be out in public, because, if he was the one that was doing it, he'd have been arrested like at the start of the movie.
I like the idea that Richard Harris is the good terrorist. Like, the whole thing is like, I mean, we don't have to get into it now, but for those of you who don't know, as a historian, the IRA is a weird situation where between the nation of Ireland, which is formed right after World War I, and North Ireland, which is still technically part of the British Isles,
the Republic of Ireland was after the Revolution in 1916?
Right, and then they refused to be a participant in World War II, which causes all sorts of tension. Regardless, after that, there's significant tensions that build. There's an original IRA that starts between 1919 and 1922, blah, 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 blah. By the 1980s, late 1980s specifically, there's something called the Troubles, because they're English and they can't think of adjectives or creative names for anything.
They understate things, the English do.
Well, that's why you leave Salem and then end up in Salem, or Plymouth.
Yeah, low-level
And you leave
civil.
Old York and end up in New York.
Yeah, low-level civil war that kills 3,000 people doesn't really roll off the tongue very well.
Call it anything, but the trouble sounds like the kind of thing you deal with when the roads have erosion.
The trouble, or when you didn't reheat your food from last night well enough.
Or when you have bad YouTube reviews or iTunes reviews and review iTunes, or please download iTunes. Better review.
Yes, that would be nice.
Amazon reviews, Pornhub reviews, please. Right.
Wait, what's this about Pornhub? Are we on Pornhub now?
Anyway, watch Dairy Girls on Netflix.
Yeah, there's a whole great backstory to the Troubles in that whole period. What was that movie that Steve McQueen did? Not the director, not the actor.
It's named after a guy.
No, it's about IRA prisoners who go on a hunger strike.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I do remember there was a movie I saw most of called The Wind That Shakes the Barley.
Yep.
Which was about when most of Ireland became independent, the ones who wanted to keep fighting the war and also were much more radical in terms of social change, still kept going, and their old comrades had to kill them. Very sad.
Is In the Name of the Father?
That might be one. I think that had Daniel Day-Lewis in it.
Yeah.
It says one called Hunger. That's in 2008.
That's the one I was thinking of, is Hunger.
Yeah.
Steve McQueen was dead by then.
The director, not the actor. He also did 12 Years a Slave, that guy. But there's actually an interesting backstory, but trying to put Jack Ryan in the middle of it, it's like, why is an American sticking his nose into something that doesn't really involve him?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I like the opening scene where he just happens to be there and his family gets involved. I just wish earlier on the obsession with Sean Bean and his family was more clear. Like, the problem is the movie tries. It just doesn't go, it doesn't commit, right? Like, I don't know. But the problem is Jack Ryan does everything right. That's why I wish the third act was more chaotic.
Or it never felt like anybody was actually in danger, is the other thing about the third act and the home invasion. When his daughter goes home, Lord Holmes also comes to visit Jack Ryan as a thank you for saving him back in London. And the IRA shows up at his house to try and take Lord Holmes hostage and kill Jack. It doesn't work, and, you know, Sean Bean gets blown up. Spoilers for a 26-year-old movie, but...
blown up after getting impaled on Chekhov's boat anchor.
Yes, that's right.
Just having, like, 5 establishing shots of the boat anchor, so you know someone's getting speared on it.
Right.
Yeah, it's not at all subtle.
But that's the other thing, is there's no tension to it. It's like, at this point, you know everybody's going to survive.
Yeah.
It ends with a boat chase, because they so badly want to be a James Bond movie. It ends with a boat chase, and the IRA gets on one boat, and they think Lord Holmes is on the other. But even you, Nick, watching the scene, it's like, guys, those boats are clearly empty.
Yeah, everything about the final scene just feels vapid. And the problem for me is you set up such an interesting scenario where a man is trying to defend his wife and child in a house that he thought was previously secure. Everyone around him is dead. After the original threat, they fill it with FBI and CIA agents, and the local PD are around, and then they all die. It's taken. That's why I alluded to The Purge earlier. It's like that first Purge movie. And then they're like, but what if there was a boat chase that no one can see because it's at night and there's fog?
Yeah, and a thunderstorm and, like...
It just turns into the perfect storm, and it should have been Face-Off, right? Like, that end scene.
Yes.
But you know what I mean? Like, there's no action. It's just, like, it's obstruction. And it's a shame, because for the whole time, Jack Ryan is the one that's right and everyone else is wrong. It should have been an X-Files episode. Because it's not only that Mulder and Scully are working to the same goal, and Scully is against him and Mulder is right. It's that they're, at the right moment, become superhuman, almost. The one point where Jack Ryan is not superhuman is at the end, and he's fighting the fog and the spray, and his hair looks like garbage, and you're like, where was Harrison Ford for the last 20 minutes? He should have had us show off right in the house.
I think in the books it was in the house. I remember they got to the house by a boat. I don't remember a boat chase going away from the house.
But that's the better scene. It should have ended like Skyfall. That's a movie. And, I mean, frankly, of course, this did well because they had...
Well, at the time, Tom Clancy, he used to be huge, and that's why he still gets his name slapped on video games to this very day.
I mean, he was the... I mean, also, ironically, he was the Stephen King of the time, but he was Stephen King at the time.
Well, I mean, he was one of those airport writers, so it was like him and John Grisham and just the people that they had like 10 copies of his books at every single airport in the U.S.
By the way, I realize, God bless her, J.K. Rowling is the only one person like that now, isn't she? Because, like, you're right, because back then it was also and John Grisham.
Yep.
I think James Patterson might be.
That's another one.
But because at the same time, from like 89 through like 9/11, that beautiful day, 9/11.
They brought Tom Clancy on the air to talk about crashing a plane into a building as a terrorist attack, because he did that in Dead of Honor first.
I think I know what he's talking about. CNN was interviewing him when the North Tower collapsed.
My favorite story about that, in a weird way, not in a perverted way. I mean, I remember I was in 9/11, you know, those in America. The Lone Gunman.
Yes, that X-Files show.
So for those of you who don't know, there was an X-Files with Mulder and Scully. It's a beautiful show. If you haven't seen X-Files, unsubscribe until you watch at least the first season. Great.
Watch Home. I that's a good episode.
First season might be the best first season of television. I put it on par with the Sopranos. Mm-hmm. It's whatever. So there was some nerd that called the Lone Gunman, who were friends of Mulder, who were just conspiracy theorists. Essentially, imagine Alex Jones, but, you know, fun-loving.
Yeah, more adorable and innocent.
Kind of. I mean, you're right, but you realize that they're essentially Alex Jones. They got their own spinoff, and their first episode is that the government is going to fly planes into skyscrapers, and that came out in August of 2001. I mean, that's not a joke.
That happened.
Straightforward. And then episodes happened, and then 9/11 happened, and then...
The Lone Gunman was canceled. Did you see how they were brought back, or at least one of them was brought back in the revival?
I did.
That was weird.
That was weird. Especially since their death in the show is phenomenal. It's a perfect ending for those guys. They uncover a conspiracy, and they decide to save the world by sacrificing themselves. The fact that you resurrect them...
Well, it was only the one, and I don't know if he was really resurrected, but...
Well, Doug, watch X-Files! It's a good show!
I would like to talk about it.
We can't
watch the X-Files, but first let's talk more about Patriot Games.
Party time. I would like to get my shamrock shape.
You guys ready to talk about the end?
Okay, so villain's dead, and one of the whole subplots is that Dr. Ryan, not Jack Ryan, but his wife, yes, they're both doctors, which leads to some confusion because there's scenes where they'll call Jack Dr. Ryan and her Mrs. Ryan, but anyway, she's pregnant, apparently. They're expecting another child, and at the end, her gynecologist, I guess.
Zelensky, whatever
his name was.
Any name that says the Z is made up.
They call, and then there's that 2-minute scene about Jack and his daughter debating whether or not they want the doctor to reveal the gender of the baby. And then it cuts to credits before we actually find out, which I'm sure that's how the book ended.
It cuts right to
Well, it cuts right to Lorraine McKinnon singing something, but...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was Enya.
I was joking. I mean, it probably was Enya. I just... Lorraine McKinnon was the first new age person I could think of.
Credits was a different song than one of the IRA guys sitting in his apartment watching movies and listening to Enya when some dude show up at his house to kill him.
I do like the idea, based on your pitch, of an Irish guy having an MST3K, but it's Enya.
Would it be a good move?
I get what they were kind of going for with the emotion of that scene, because, except though, they already said that the baby was okay after the car crash, right? So there was no tension there whatsoever. And I liked that they were trying to do a nice little family moment, but it just kind of dragged.
There's a callback earlier in the movie where they're talking about whether she wanted to have a brother or sister.
I know, I understand.
You know, it'd be great if you go full on horror in the third act, and the daughter goes, "If it's a boy, I'd like to call it Sean." And it just cuts to credits.
Anyway, it cuts rest of credits after the wife says thank you and hangs up the phone. Now, although, how did the books go, man?
I don't even remember. I just know that much in the books is made of how Catholic they are and they have a lot of kids.
Wait a minute. A Catholic in the White House eventually? No, surely not.
Well, I mean, the problem is that it takes four books for him to be assassinated.
Right.
He takes two for the team.
I really do think there's room for improvement if they had the baby was potentially in some danger, or there was some danger of her losing it after the car crash, but I guess they didn't want to do that because it'd be too depressing.
Well, the book dealer chick is coming after the mom and daughter. I thought that was the designated cat fight, but it's over in about 2 seconds. And Dr. Ryan's brains are the shotgun.
Yeah. And then doesn't Sean eventually kill her?
Yeah, because she calls him out and shoots there. He's like surrogate father.
This rare...
Because he wants to kill Jack Ryan, like after the war.
By the way, this rare book dealer chick is the same woman that was at the initial bombing. She had red hair, and that's what triggered Jack's memories to look for a woman in the Libyan training camp.
Well, and I mean...
See, it all ties together, people.
And she has a very particular set of skills, like all Irish people do.
My skills, and these are skills that are on prominent display in satellite imagery.
Yeah, right.
That is literally the line. I am never getting over that.
He says it subtly, but I'm going to always think of it like a shock jock. So you say you have Geralt's, like... regardless, I mean, we've talked about this long enough. I think we should get to our, our summation here, our final judgments. Matt, what do you think?
I think it's a pretty good movie. Y'all should go see it.
I'm actually going to take the stance that Matt took with The Fugitive. I thought it was kind of boring. I mean, it was just plodding along quite a bit. I'm not really a big Tom Clancy fan. I know he did his research, and I know he was a smart guy when it came to his subject matter, but I just never really found him that engaging, and this movie really doesn't change my mind. I just feel like there weren't any real stakes involved for any of the characters, and it just kind of, compared to The Fugitive, it just took me out of the movie.
You guys split me this time. I think I'm between the two of you. I agree with Matt. I think it's a movie you should see. It's sub 2 hours. I think it's an hour 46 or 47.
It's a little under 2 hours, like an hour 56, I think.
I think it's fine. I think it's good. I think it's relatively tight, but I don't disagree with Daniel. Like, the problem is, when we watch The Fugitive, there's two narrators, effectively. There's Tommy Lee Jones and Harrison Ford. And this one, it seems like the director is the only narrator, dragging us along between shots. There's no one character you lock into. Frankly, the problem with me is someone like Samuel Jackson. Jackson is in a scene where we're introduced to him effectively because he gives something called the Purple Bullseye Award, right? Because Jack is shocked, but he doesn't die.
Well, yeah, you're teaching history, you're not being history.
Mm-hmm. Right. He shows up 6 other times. I don't think he has more than 2 more lines in the entire movie, even though he's always there. No one person narrates the story. No one, like, takes us from scene to scene. There's sloppy directing throughout. And yet, I agree with Matt, this is a good movie worth watching because it's not loud, it's tense, it's fast. It's between a lazy Sunday afternoon movie, and then if you can sit down and watch it, you'd rewatch it because it's a good, tight movie. Threats to his family are real. I just wish they were more intense. It's like a B-minus C-plus movie that you want to watch to fix it. You'll rewatch it.
If you're a 50-year-old man who is looking to kill a couple hours on a Sunday afternoon, I think you'll really enjoy this.
Or if you're a 34-year-old like I am, it'll help you with your nap, and then you could watch it the next Sunday when you can also take a nap and watch the other part of it. Thanks for watching, guys. Before I give my closing, I'll tell you how next month is going to work. Sudsy, Matt, me, and Steve-O are going to give you 4 options. We've decided that December is going to be a family-friendly month, but we each have different interpretations of what that means. We're not going to make it a Christmassy month, which we've done in the past. We're going to make it family movies. Could it be a musical? Could it be an adorable kid actor that we lived with and stomached for way longer? Could it be dramatic, but in that Nickelodeon way? Who knows? It's up to you guys. Check Twitter, Facebook. Also, if you haven't been, listen to Geekly Oddcast, Otter Worlds, and Here Be Tigers, our new spin-off podcast group that we're working on. And also, I love you. But finally, we're trying to make this more aimed at you. We left our old podcasting partners. So if you listen to our old podcasting partners, you should. They make good stuff. We left for reasons that were completely different, and we want to support Mike and Mike and Mike and Mike and the third Mike.
Call him Adam Cubed.
Right. Danny Boy, Matt and I decided we should leave for other reasons, but we're with Thomas and David and Jared and other podcasts who are coming to us now. So listen up, support us, support everyone, because podcasting is hard. We do it for free, and we want you guys to be a part of it. So follow us on Twitter. Both Daniel and I have a Letterboxd. Mm-hmm. I'm on Facebook. You're on Facebook. We're all on Facebook. Follow us on Facebook. And at this point, I'm announcing we have a Discord server. So if you're on Discord, you can chat with us directly. And we're going to set up our Patreon through Here Be Tigers and Geekly Oddcast and us, so you can be part of that as well. Matt, Daniel, do you have anything?
I can't really think of anything I've got going on. I still do stuff for popdose.com, so please check that out.
Yeah, I mean, Nick mentioned I've got my blog, The World According to Quinn. There's also at Matthew W. Quinn on Twitter, and of course my Amazon page.
And he's got a new book out.
Little People, Big Guns. Matt, Big Glorious Bad Taste.
Matt and I argue about movies constantly on this podcast, and I want to say I respect him and Daniel more than anything on movie reviews. And so here's the end of the thing.
My frozen heart is starting to warm, Nick.
Oh, I love you to death. Leave his reviews, because honestly, him and I disagree on this shit, and read his reviews on how to fix movies. We disagree on that too, but that's why we get along, because we disagree on it. He respects my opinion sometimes. I respect his opinion sometimes, but that's how these things work. Daniel writes crap for Pop Dust. I don't know how to describe it.
Is it crap they pay for? So that's probably, if it is, that's a good thing.
I wish.
Yeah, right? Much.
I think it's good stuff. Well, some of it turned out okay, I think.
But here's the thing about it. We respond to you guys as much. Sudsy, Quinn, they do stuff because people read it. We do stuff here on Myopia because you listen. That's why we reach out to you on Twitter. That's why we reach to you on Facebook. For the 10,000 of you on Twitter, to the 700 of you on our Facebook page, to the people of you who follow me on Letterboxd, that's why we do it. So tell me what you want, because next month you're going to depict what family movies we do, and I can tell you, because Steve grabbed me by the collar and looked into my eyes and said, if you don't do Rush Hour in January, I'm going to punch you. We're doing Rush Hour and another cop movie in January. I'm aiming for Kindergarten Cop. You guys and your interactions tell us what to do, so keep participating.
Or else I'll keep annoying Nick to have us do the Guyver 2. Do you really want me to do that?
Stay tuned next week, every future week, as long as we can imagine that my prostate holds out. We will do movies until IMDb tells us to stop logging in. So, thank you guys. December's coming around the corner, and as I log out every time, stay tuned next week and every future week as we put a piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Why Between Your Childhood is a product of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, produced by Nick Hoffman, Daniel Suttis, and Matthew Quinn, and edited by Daniel Suttis. Our theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons license by Attribution 3.0 license.